You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Oh, it's such a conspiracy! This screaming headline on Drudge, not all of it yesterday afternoon. Part of it was the solar storm is going to shut down all life on planet Earth, or words to that effect. It's hitting us right now, by the way. If this show should just like suddenly start going, it's because the sun is ejecting massive amounts. This is true. Right now, there's a massive solar flare that is hitting planet Earth that started around 4 o'clock this morning Eastern time. And so far, so good. We're still here. And not just us. I mean, everybody. You'll recall back in the 80s, I think it was, there was a grid failure in the Northeast that like shut down the Northeastern United States, and they couldn't figure out what it was. They thought, you know, was it this some kind of terrorist or somebody, you know, a failure or a plant went down? Turned out it was sunspots, you know, hitting the grid with so much force that basically breakers just started popping and going, wait a minute, there's more power here than there should be or not enough or whatever. But anyhow, so far that hasn't happened. But Drudge was alternating between that and the big revelation that Andrew Breitbart was going to release a piece of videotape that was shown on PBS back in 2008. Oh, he didn't know that, apparently. That was actually written about. And this is this piece of videotape that was written about in David Remnick's book, The Bridge. Page 214, his speech concluded, his speech being the President of the United States, President Obama, when he was a law student at Harvard and he was the head of the Law Review, the editor of the Harvard Law Review, he gave this speech introducing the first tenured black professor, the first tenured African-American at Harvard, Harvard Law, introducing this fellow because the university was going on strike and this fellow was participating, his name is Derrick Bell, over the lack of tenure being given to an African-American woman professor at Harvard. And you look at the audience and you look at the video, and actually most of the people were white. And Obama says, okay, let me introduce you to Bell and, you know, listen carefully to what he has to say, and he says something nice about Bell's words. I don't have the exact phrase here, but it's and the speech concludes, and he hugs him, and then Bell gets up and gives a speech. That's from David Remnick's book, published, you know, like years ago. New York Times reported on this in 2007. That's even before the 2008 election. But last night, Sean Hannity did this whole hour-long thing about how this has been hidden from the American people. And he shows a black professor contemporarily showing this clip of Obama hugging Bell and saying, you know, I have this video, but I kept it hid during 2008. As if he was the only guy who had the video and he was like some giant conspiracy. Oh, this is a guy bragging, right? So it's like, this was the Breitbart thing? I mean, this is incredible. BuzzFeed actually got the same video, and they released it yesterday morning, trumping the Breitbart release that Drudge was hyping. And, you know, this was all about, there's communists out here, you know, and Ben Cohen was doing the whole story. In fact, he was on this morning with Soledad O'Brien on CNN. There's a fairly, you know, brilliant and long clip of that. Well, it's on several of the websites. I'm talking about this. There was no scoop there. Soledad O'Brien kept saying, what's the bombshell? That Barack Obama knew Derrick Bell? I mean, that's the bombshell?
Oh, yeah, Derrick Bell, he once gave a speech in Chicago that was actually Jeremiah Wright said something good about.
Can you imagine? Derek Bell was a respected academic. He died a year or so ago from cancer. He's no longer with us. He was not the frothing radical that Hannity has these two kids on last night just kind of going off on this thing. And he gave him a hug? I mean, seriously? This is what's going to make Mitt Romney president of the United States? Because that's what Andrew Breitbart said at CPAC. You know, we're going to vet this dangerous radical. Yeah, this is big time journalism. There's this brilliant pastiche of this that you just have to see over at Fire Dog Lake. T-Bog, one of the bloggers there over at Fire Dog Lake, Jane Hampshire site, firedoglake.com, has a YouTube clip of President Obama. I think it was last year. He was playing basketball with the troops. Remember that? In fact, it might have even been in Afghanistan or something, but whatever it was, he was on the basketball court, and he shoots this incredible, you know, slam dunk from halfway across the court. And I don't play basketball. I don't know all the language for it, but you know, just bang, you know, drops this thing in. And there's a bunch of, you know, the troops there that are going to play him in the game, and they're standing there watching. And T-Bog writes, "An exclusive video acquired by T-Bog Private Investigations and Dog Walking Services, they poop it, we scoop it, President Black Man Barack Obama is shown taunting American servicemen and women with his Kenyan shooting skills he learned in a madrasa. He then forces these guardians of American freedom to pay tribute to him like he's some kind of jungle king or something. This is the first of my 7-Eleven-part series, vetting that colored guy by showing him doing things that might be communist or too black." That is, and if I offended anybody with my language, or T-Bog for that matter, my apologies. But I think it's important to say, because that is the essence of what Sean Hannity was saying last night. Look at this black law student, this African-American law student, Barack Obama. Now, by the way, what's the bombshell here? You know, there's this whole conspiracy theory that Barack Obama actually didn't go to Harvard Law on the right. He was like out of the country and secretly brought in to be president. He's the Manchurian candidate, all that. So now Breitbart from the grave has proven to us what? Barack Obama actually did go to Harvard Law and actually was a pretty big deal there. But what Hannity and these guys from the Breitbart site were just so hysterical about, it would have been humorous if it wasn't so tragic that this was on a network that millions of people watch and take seriously. It was basically, look at that. There's an African American law student, and he's hugging an African American professor, and they're working for the rights of African Americans. We can't have this. Now, obviously, those are my words, not Sean Hannity's, but that was my takeaway from watching it, and I encourage you to check out the satire of it over at firedoglake.com. It's right there, and watch for example Soledad O'Brien's CNN clip this morning, where she talked with one of these kids, this Ben kid. And she kept saying over and over again, what's the scoop? Why is this a big deal? And he would go, oh, well, it has to do with, and she's like, wait a minute, what's the scoop? Oh, he knew Jeremiah Wright, or he knew somebody who knew Jeremiah. What's the scoop here? No scoop.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, actually, here's the scoop. And, you know, Hannity, any opportunity to promote it. Did you know that guy living in the White House is a black man? Fair and only slightly unbalanced. Welcome back. Tom Harvard here with you. And by the way, if you have ever woken up in the middle of the night and thought to yourself, I shouldn't be awake. I'm going to have the coolest geeky science for you about an hour and 10 minutes from now. It's going to blow your mind. Anyhow, so last night, Andrew Breitbart reaches up out of the grave and exposes President Obama as a guy who actually went to Harvard Law School and knew one of the genuine scholars who wrote about critical race theory. I mean, holy cow, can we have that? In addition, Mr. Limbaugh yesterday, this poor fellow. I mean, this poor guy. I just want to repeat what I said yesterday, only do it very briefly. Going after his advertisers, I understand that, but I'm not a fan of it because I know how radio works, and it's going to hurt all of talk radio, first of all, not just Limbaugh. And secondly, you know, we saw this with Michael Savage a couple of years ago. We've seen it before. And what will happen is, you know, 3 months from now, 5 months from now, the advertisers will be back. I mean, they want to make money. And that's no slam on them. It's just these things go in cycles like this. But if you really want to have an impact on Limbaugh's program or any programming, talk to the station managers, not to the advertisers, because they decide whether or not to carry the show. And that's where, I mean, having no advertisers is bad, but having no show, that's even worse. So, anyway, this was Limbaugh yesterday, speaking of Limbaugh, continuing his war on women. Clip number 10, Jacob, please.
By the way, what is the exit strategy for the war on women? Just thinking about it. Well, I'm just wondering, when do you pull out in the war on women?
I'll bet it took half the morning to come up with that line, right? And then he goes off on, and I think, you know, Dennis Kucinich lost to Marcy Kaptur, as we reported yesterday, in the primary in Ohio. And, in fact, he's going to be on our program tonight. And I think this is a really sad thing, and I'm looking forward to his next incarnation, and we'll be reporting back to you tomorrow on what I learned hanging out with him tonight. So, anyhow, here's Limbaugh about Kucinich. This is what he has to say about, you know, a guy who ran for president several times, a man who represented the state of Ohio for, I believe, about two decades in the United States Congress, a man who has stood with distinction and always stood by his values and by his beliefs. Here's what Limbaugh had to say about him.
So we're losing character. Barney Frank, Dennis Kucinich. This place needs character, and characters is just too bad. And some people say it's always great to see Kucinich's wife. I've never seen Kucinich's wife, so I don't know what. I've had three people say it. I'm really going to miss her more than I'm going to miss him. Really, she's a babe? I don't notice babes anymore. I have one. And as such, I don't notice them.
Property? Okay, so apropos of that, the Congresswoman Turner, excuse me, Senator Turner, this is Ohio State Senator Nina Turner, introduced legislation yesterday, or announced yesterday, that she's going to introduce legislation in the Ohio State Senate, Senate Bill 307 in Ohio, that is to protect the greatest gender, her phrase. She says, well, all I'm trying to do is protect vulnerable men. Remember, Limbaugh had, you know, he's coming back from this sex tour of the Dominican Republic, and he had 37 Viagras in his pocket and got stopped at customs and all that kind of stuff. She says, all I'm trying, or reported sex tour. I shouldn't make that as a blanket statement without qualifying it. All I'm trying to do is, she says, is protect vulnerable men. Poor Rush. All I'm trying to do is protect vulnerable men and make sure that they understand the consequences for their actions. If, in fact, they need to be treated for erectile dysfunction, that it's most important that they receive an affidavit that must be signed by their current or former partner to make sure that it is physical and not psychological, and that the doctor takes the steps and the time to really explain to them their options, including natural remedies or celibacy. Senate Bill 307 requires men, in order to get a Viagra prescription, that they must have a signed affidavit from at least one sex partner confirming that they have indeed experienced the symptoms of impotence in the previous 90 days. They must have a psychological screening to ensure that the condition is, in fact, medical and not psychological. They must have ongoing cardiac stress tests and outpatient counseling about potential side effects. Information from the prescribing physician about risks, complications, as well as non-medical options, and a copy of the medical rationale for treatment filed in the patient's permanent medical records. And then she reaches out to her fellow legislators, State Senator Nina Turner, and says, I will be introducing a bill to address an issue that has gone unaddressed for far too long, the diligence with which men in state legislatures across the nation have considered the fragile health and feeble minds of women has prompted me to reflect on the welfare of the more powerful breed, men. This legislation will take strong steps to protect men from the harmful effects of PDE5 inhibitors, phosphodiesterase type 5 inhibitors. PDE5 inhibitors are prescribed to men who are experiencing symptoms of male impotence and carry serious side effects such as priapism, hearing loss, vision loss, heart pain, heart failure, abnormal heart rhythms, high and low blood pressure, history of stroke, eye problems, sickle, it goes on and on. Please join us in this fight to protect those who are our greatest gender. Right. The satire is flying right now. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Breitbart has a news flash. Obama's black. And Nina Turner says, let's protect the men. These are great stories. Hey friends, Tom Hartman here with big news. We're moving! Starting next week, the Tom Hartman Program will be live 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's noon to 3 Pacific Time. Welcome back to the True People's Media, the Tom Hartman Program.
Love it. That's what's coming.
Joe the Plumber Wurzelbacher. Hey, Joe, welcome to the show. What's the best thing to do when your drains are running slow or clogged up?
Well, what I find the best thing to do is fill up both basins or the single basin. And with cold water, hot water really doesn't make the difference. And flush your pipes at least once a week.
Okay. So that's our Joe the Plumber alert theme music. That was an actual, this was, 2 years ago, Jacob, was it? Thereabouts? Joe the Plumber, maybe a little longer than that, 3 years ago, yeah. Joe the Plumber had gone to Israel on behalf of Pajamas Media. He was working for this conservative media company to do a video about whatever, Israel, Palestine, all that kind of stuff. And he came back and he was doing a media tour and solicited our show. Said, hey, you want to have Joe on? And we said, sure, no problem. We put conservatives on all the time. We'd be glad to have an interesting debate, a thoughtful debate with him. And this is the first time this has ever happened. I've been doing this show for 9 years. And back in my younger days, I was 3 years as a DJ, 7 years in news and radio news, a year as a program director. I've been in radio media, radio and TV media, in aggregate, 18 years. This is the first and only time this has ever happened. Joe the Plumber's people, his handlers, sent us a form that they wanted us to sign before he came on the show. And the form said that I would only ask him questions about his area of expertise. Now, I think what they meant was I would only ask him questions about Israel that he had just come back from, and I wouldn't wander off into things like, why don't you have a license to be a plumber, and why do you call yourself Joe when your name is Sam, and stuff like that that might embarrass him. So I said, fine, and we signed the paper, and we brought him on the show, and, it was an 11, 12-minute segment, 13-minute segment, I think, and I started right off by disclosing this to my listeners. I said, Joe, thanks for coming on the show today. I had to sign a form saying that I wouldn't ask you questions about anything other than your area of expertise, and I intend to honor that. And he said, thank you. And then I said, so what's the best way to clean, empty what you just heard, what's the best way to get your plugged drain unplugged? Is those, are there crystal things? Will they ruin the pipes, or should I use the liquid stuff or a plunger or what? And he gave a very thoughtful answer. I mean, he clearly knows plumbing. And then I asked him about plugged-up toilets, and he knew about that. And, you know, I asked him about sump pumps in the basement and things like that. He had some ideas on that. And for 15 minutes, we talked plumbing. And at one point, Carl Wolfson had suggested this question, and I thought it was a great question. I said, hey, Joe, you ever get hit on, you know, when you're visiting people's houses? And he says, I'm paraphrasing, but this is pretty close to word for word. You could find the archives over at White Rose Society. He said, yeah, he said, I've made a joke to my boss that we should call this, the plumbing shop that he worked for, you know, the Acme Plumbing Company and pickup service or stud service or something like that. He said, yeah, the women are coming on to me all the time. And in fact, he got so into it that I kind of interrupted him because it was starting to embarrass me on his behalf. So, you do. Jacob has the clip. Here you go.
I'm Carl Wolfson on the morning show at KPOJ Radio. And, Joe, I'd like to ask you, there are a lot of stories about hot, hunky plumbers being hit on out there. And tell us, maybe anecdotally, how often that happens, and is there a way to kind of come on to a plumber in a work situation that's any better than any other technique?
So that was Carl's question. And we actually played Carl's question to Joe, and then Joe went off on the thing. You don't have the clip of Joe going off on it, though, do you? Okay, unfortunately, that's not. But in any case, so Joe the plumber, and he was on CNN yesterday. Here's clip number one. This, of course, the clip that made him famous back in 2008.
My name is Joe Wurzelbach.
Good to see you, Joe.
I'm getting ready to buy a company that makes $250,000 to $270,000 a year. Your new tax plan is going to tax me more, doesn't it?
Yeah, he's getting ready to buy a company that makes $280,000 a year. We discovered later that he wasn't getting ready to buy a company, and he didn't make $280,000 a year. And he picked that number because Obama was going to raise taxes on people making more than $250,000, remember? And which kind of never quite happened. But in any case, and then Obama said, well, you know, yeah, I think wealthy people should pay a little more. We need to spread the wealth around. And the spread the wealth around, that's what, you know, that went viral, right? That was John McCain's big thing. So anyway, yesterday on CNN, I think clip number three is the really, this is extraordinary. Here you go. You're running for Congress and you're afraid of gotcha questions?
What do you do for a living now?
Well, for the last 4 years, I've gone around building houses, taking trees down, plumbing, and speaking at different events around the country, encouraging Americans to really get informed on who they're going to vote for, stop voting on 30-second sound bites, and make sure their vote counts and really exercise their civic responsibility as an American.
And what do you think, or how do you think that qualifies you to run for Congress?
Uh-oh. That's a gotcha question.
Qualifies me. One, I'm an American citizen. Two, I'm very much involved in the process of what's going on. I'm sorry. It just seems like a silly question.
Oh, well, no. I mean, you're running for Congress, so people would want to know what your qualifications are, your breadth of experience in order to lead.
Yeah. And then where did he say gotcha? Was it in the next clip? Clip five. Oh, okay. Here we go.
The district that you're competing in, it goes from Cleveland to Toledo, right?
Yes.
Very Democratic in that area.
Correct.
The challenge for you, because you're a conservative Republican, it brings up some comments that you said, and I want to share them with you. In an interview in 2009 in Christianity Today, you made comments about gay people. Queer means strange and unusual. It's not like a slur, like you would call a white person a honky or something like that. You also said, I've had some friends that are actually homosexual, and I mean, they know where I stand, and they know that I wouldn't have them anywhere near my children. But at the same time, they're people, mm-hmm. and they're going to do their thing. Have you changed your positions on this at all?
So this is TMZ. This isn't CNN, is what you're saying.
Of course it's CNN. These
now,
are things that, that I would like to know if you still stand by them or if you have changed your positions on them.
No, I want everybody to have a job. Americans, as far
change
as that goes,
what about
Republican,
these comments
Democrat,
that you made?
Union, non-union.
What about these comments that you made? Do you stand by these comments?
Listen, in my dictionary, in everyone's dictionary from the 1970s, the word queer did mean strange and unusual. It was no slur to it. Do you challenge that?
No, I'm questioning whether or not you still stand
I'm
by these positions.
I'm trying to get where you're coming from. I'm trying to get where you're coming from. What context are you using this
the
in?
The context that I'm using
Come
is
on,
that
you're trying to do a gotcha moment.
Position.
It's quite obvious.
No, it's not a gotcha moment. These are things that you said.
And they're things that he said. So anyhow, Joe the plumber out there. And more important news, Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker is facing this recall. And they just released the numbers on some of the money that he has raised. He's raised a lot of money. 336 revealed donors, only 18 of them are Wisconsin residents. And according to an FEC filing, of the 9 donors who've given more than $200, and that would be the people who are giving him big bucks, how many come from Wisconsin? None. Zero. And a new study out from the Economic Policy Institute on EPA regulations. You know, the Republicans are all hysterical. I've had this debate on this show repeatedly. These regulations are killing jobs, right? And I've got to kill off the EPA. Remember, I think there was a consensus when Rick Perry, you know, he could remember he wanted to do away with, as I recall, the EPA. There was something he couldn't remember. What was it, the energy, education, EPA, whatever it was. And these are job killers. Well, actually, the Economic Policy Institute says that as many as 135,000 net jobs will be created just by the 2015 EPA regulations that are already part of law but won't kick in for another 3 years. It's 135,000 jobs. Why? Because if you're going to produce less emissions from your smokestacks when you're refining oil into gasoline to ship it to Mexico and England and China and things like that, if you're going to do that, if you're going to reduce your smokestack emissions so the fewer people get cancer, you're going to have to hire somebody to design and build smokestack scrubbers and install them and maintain them. And with all the refineries we have in the country and that technology that needs to be, that's 135,000 new jobs. In fact, just the new regulations that are proposed to clean up the Chesapeake Bay would create 35 times as many jobs as the entire Keystone XL pipeline. So regulations create jobs. I mean, it's just kind of common sense, you know? Okay, your food factory has to be clean. You're going to have to hire a janitor. In fact, your food factory has to be so clean that you know that you're not producing food that is contaminated with Listeria and E. coli. You're going to have to hire somebody to periodically test your food for Listeria and E. coli. It creates jobs. The only way a regulation could not create a job is if it puts the company out of business. But why would government promulgate, why would anybody promulgate a regulation that would put a company out of business? Because the company shouldn't be in business. Any company that's put out of business by a regulation shouldn't be doing what they're doing. Right? If what they're doing is so toxic that the representatives of we the people have said, you know, that's too much arsenic to put into the water. Sorry, you can't do that. And the company says, well, if we can't put that much arsenic in the water, then we're going out of business. I say, goodbye. Good riddance. I mean, that's what we want, isn't it? Clean water?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
So I've been going off on stuff here for 45 minutes. We'll pick up your calls right after this. Stick around. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Joe in Long Beach, California, listening on K-Talk. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Yeah, I was just listening to your comments regarding Joe the Plumber. I'm a gay man, and you know, most gays and lesbians will not have friends like Joe the Plumber or Sarah Palin who say they have friends that are gay. Mm-hmm. Mainly because, you know what, when you have gay friends, you're pretty much clued in. And most of my friends don't refer to me as homosexual.
Right.
And most of my friends aren't afraid of me being by their kids.
Yeah.
So when these people make comments like that, I mean, it's just nonsense. The fact is they're lying.
Yeah, it's the equivalent of, you know, 20 and 30 years ago, or even today, people saying, oh, yeah, some of my very best friends are black, or some of my best friends are Jewish, or some of my, you know, when in fact what they're, it's usually the sentence that follows a racist statement or an anti-Semitic statement. And,
right.
And go ahead.
With regards to, say, for instance, Joe the Plumber and Sarah Palin, the difference between, you know, them and regular people is that they want to be politicians to create laws that discriminate against me or their friends. You know, we all have, everyone can say we have gay friends, right, but these people want to discriminate against you.
Yes.
Their friends, knowing that, will not be their friends. They would drop them.
Right. They want to either maintain institutionalized discrimination in the case of those states, the 42 states that do not allow gay marriage, for example, or the right, the many states that don't have hate law protections for gays. They either want to maintain institutional discrimination, or in the case of racial discrimination, they want to go back to a time when institutional discrimination was legal. And or in the case of, like, you know, Prop 8 in California? Where the Mormon Church fought so hard to repeal gay marriage in California. So, yeah, totally with you. Joe, thank you very much for the call. You said it very, very well. Renee in Judah, Wisconsin, watching us on Free Speech TV. Hey, Renee, what's up?
I had a question for you, Tom.
Mm-hmm.
Has the EPA ever, like, actually closed down a factory that wasn't maintaining EPA standards? Or should we just do away with the whole fine business and make the actual company do what it's supposed to do?
Well, the EPA, by and large, does do that. They do make companies do what they're supposed to do. One of the problems is that over the last 30 years, since the Reagan administration, the EPA has been badly underfunded. And it was very, very badly underfunded during the Bush administration. So they didn't have the level of inspection and enforcement that they really needed. They're getting some of that funding back under the Obama administration, but it's still way lower than it should be. Now, that said, this is the super-duper, you just put your finger right on it, Renee. This is the super-duper question to throw at your conservative friends when they, you know, and I've done it on this show when I have conservatives on who say, oh, these regulations are going to destroy business. Well, if there was one company that had been put out of business by regulation, could you please name it? And they will say, because, you know, if you were to say, can you name one company that was subsidized by the Obama administration to produce green energy and then went bankrupt? They can say Solyndra, right? If they can find one example out of hundreds of companies that were funded or got some sort of government subsidies to do green energy, they found one that went bankrupt and they turned it into a celebrity. If they could have found an example of a company, it would be a household name. If, you know, Acme Widget Company had tried to refine oil and they were unable to afford the cost of scrubbers and they went out of business, Acme Refining Company or whatever widget company would every conservative in the country would know that name and know that story. It would be the storyline that was the example of how horrible regulations are. But the fact of the matter is they don't have an example, Renee. And the proof of it is that we don't hear about that company the way that we hear about Solyndra and the way that they're trying to. I was talking about this yesterday. They try to take down General Motors. It's, you know, the last night on TV, I had a guy on who was a conservative and he was like, oh, yeah, the GM, the Volt, you know, blow up in your face. Well, no, they don't. But what I don't get is why do conservatives hate American made products made by the last American car manufacturer? I just don't get it. Anyway, Renee, thank you for the call. Thanks for the comment. Lee in Gilcrest, Colorado. Hey, Lee, what's up?
They didn't tell you.
Well, what I have here was a family farmer. So,
yeah.
You know, I have some general idea what you're going to talk about, but I really don't know. So let me toss it to you.
I was a family farmer mm-hmm. in the Reagan years.
Okay.
And he promised us $3 a bushel corn, price support.
Okay.
Now, I always sealed my corn. When the price got above ceiling, I'd buy out the contract and sell it.
Right.
And he dropped it to $1.80 a bushel.
Right.
And which this meant at $2.70 a bushel, I wasn't making a profit. I was just paying expenses.
Right. And at $1.80, you were losing money. And this is why Willie Nelson was running around doing Farm Aid during the Reagan administration. And in the years
right.
thereafter, because when Reagan destroyed these programs, it worked to the tremendous benefit of Cargill and ADM and the other. There's three or four big companies that own most of the farmland, the working farmland in this country, and control most of the crops, the raw crops in this country. And it wasn't that way before Reagan. Before Reagan, it was small family farmers like yourself who were selling to the wholesalers. And what happened was when Reagan fixed it so that these big companies could devastate your prices, they could, you know, through speculation, they could wipe out your markets. It wiped out small American farmers and farmers like yourself. I don't know your story, but I know in Michigan, I grew up in Lansing, and there was all kinds of farmland around Lansing. And we were in the southern suburbs, and I mean, we were literally a quarter mile from farmland, five blocks from farmland. And I went to school with kids who were farmers. And I still know them. And they ended up having to sell their family farms to these big corporations and then rent the land and the house back and farm that property for that corporation. That was their job. And that's happened all across the country. I don't know if that happened to you, Lee, but I'm guessing you know people it did happen to.
Well, it happened to me, but I just sold out.
Yeah, okay. So
farmers bought it.
Yeah.
I had 400 acres.
Yeah. Well, Lee,
one bought 240, and within 3 years, he lost it.
Oh, my. Lee, thank you for sharing your story with us, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Did you know that 70% of ground beef in the United States contains pink slime? I will tell you about that a little later. We're going to be talking about sleep coming up. I want to get back to Joe the Plumber. Daryl Issa, fairly revealing response to our old friend Lee Fong. A lot coming up here in the news of the day as well. But John Corbett is on the line with us right now. John is an entrepreneur, a blogger, civil rights advocate. His website, TSA, outofourpants.wordpress.com. So you can kind of get the sense of what he's about. In fact, last year he filed a lawsuit against the TSA, claiming that the agency had violated his Fourth Amendment rights. And he's filed another lawsuit on 21 additional counts, including false arrest, violating civil rights, and inflicting emotional distress and conspiracy. John, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So if I have this right, you've got a video up. You published a video showing yourself or showing how to sneak metal through the Chertoff porno x-ray scanners.
That's right.
Tell me about it.
Well, essentially, as you mentioned, I've been suing the TSA for about 18 months now. Things in courts happen very slowly. So these, in the meantime, all these courts are taking their time. People are being groped every day by the TSA, being forced to go through these essentially virtual scripture machines. So my thought was that if we could come up with a way to show that they're ineffective, then maybe we can get rid of them a little quicker. So that's what I did. Essentially, I took the last 2 months researching vulnerabilities in the new body scanner program. And the one that I published is pretty simple. If you ever looked at any kind of x-ray, the TSA scanners included, kind of picture like a black background with a white subject, whether it's a broken bone or, in TSA's case, your entire body.
Right, it's a reverse image. A negative image.
So if you have anything with you, such as, for example, a firearm, and that's on top of your body in this image, it's going to show up as a black spot on the white image of your body. But if you have that same firearm on your side, it's going to be the black spot on the black background. So this is no longer going to be visible.
So it would just blend into the background. So all you do is put the metal on into your clothing on the outside of your body where it would be normally invisible anyway because it's shooting past your clothing and it'll just blend into the black background. Is that your point?
Right. So what I did to test it was I took a dollar store sewing kit, we put a pocket on the side of a button-down shirt, the extreme side, and placed an empty metal container in it that would, obviously alarm a metal detector and certainly would alarm the TSA body scanner operators if they were to see it. I walked right through the scanners, both in Fort Lauderdale Airport through a back scanner x-ray, as well as in Cleveland Hopkins International Airport through one of the TSA's newest millimeter wave devices with automated threat recognition.
Wow. Is what you did illegal?
I sure hope not. No, the TSA has regulations against entering the area without the screening, which I did,
right.
Which I did not do. They also have regulations against bringing prohibited objects into the secure area, which I didn't do. It's just that the screening was not good enough to see the non-prohibited objects.
Yeah, so the bottom line is the old-fashioned magnetometers would have nailed you, but the Chertoff porno x-ray scanners, it could not see the metal that you were carrying because you had it stitched into your clothing on the side of your body, and that's the area where metal is actually invisible on these x-ray porno scanners.
Absolutely. You know, with the metal detector, you could even put that, you know, firearm inside a body cavity and it's still going on.
Yeah.
With the x-ray devices that, you know, we spent about $1 trillion on, and the TSA has told us that these were necessary and the invasions of our privacy were worth it for the safety, which is,
right.
You know, even if it did provide us additional safety.
Plus 100 people a year are going to get cancer, according to the TSA. And just imagine what's going to happen to the poor TSA workers who are standing right next to these machines all day long.
I feel so bad for them in a way.
That really concerns me.
They're prohibited from wearing dosimeters, so they don't know what their lifetime dosage is. And, you know, it's got to be a bad thing. So
yeah.
Maybe it's Darwin in action.
Okay, John, you've done a fascinating experiment here, and hopefully it'll wake some people up. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you. Take care.
John Corbett, the website, tsaoutofourpants.wordpress.com. And that's pretty amazing. Randy in Santa Cruz, California. Hey, Randy, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Oh, Tom, I want to say thank you for everything you and Louise do.
Well, and thank you for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
I love you guys. I'm 55. I consider myself to be fairly well educated, and I know what's going on around me. Can you explain Jim Crow?
Yeah.
And where was Jim Crow a guy or is it just a term?
There was an actor back in the 1830s, 1820s, 1830s, 1840s, and he continued right up till around the time of the Civil War, as I recall, whose name was Rice, I'm pretty sure, who used to perform in blackface in the old minstrel shows. And he had a character, Mr. Rice's character, I'm forgetting his first name, but in any case, he had a character by the name of Jim Crow, who was this, you know, exaggerated African-American. And this is a white actor who performed in blackface in these minstrel shows. And so before and after the Civil War, but particularly after the Civil War, after the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments were passed in the 1868-1869 era, a lot of African Americans started voting and started participating in civil discourse, and the white Southerners were freaked out about this, and so they started passing laws like poll taxes and literacy laws and a whole variety of other laws, you know, making it harder and harder for people to vote. Arguably the same thing Republicans are doing right now. That Tom Corbett in Pennsylvania is getting set to, Republican governor of Pennsylvania is about to sign, a law that says that, you know, you have to have an ID. You got to go out and buy yourself an ID in order to vote. And this was the kind of thing that they were doing back then. And those laws that prevented African Americans from participating and then morphed into after the 1898 Supreme Court decision that established the separate but equal status of African Americans. Morphed into those laws, the apartheid laws in the United States that stood right up until the 1960s, arguably, certainly till 1954, Brown versus Board of Education, but I would say through the 60s, that those laws collectively were referred to as Jim Crow laws because that guy's, you know, character, Jim Crow, he was famous back in the day. And he used to go after Andrew Johnson, if my recollection is correct, the guy who was the vice president to Abraham Lincoln for being a populist and whatnot. So, anyhow, I hope I answered your question. Apologies if I got any of that wrong. I'm sure I'll get corrected in the chat room. Joe in Springfield, Utah. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Hey, Tom. How are you today? You're
great.
Doing well, I know.
Yes, thank you.
I was wondering if you could ask Dash a question when you talked to him tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember. A couple weeks ago, I called, and my campaign is to have a national constitutional literacy that I think changes the face of politics if we accomplish that, because everything emanates from us. And so Dennis is a good case point, I think, because if he had a constituency, you could ask him, if you had a constituency that was constitutionally literate, do you think you would have kept your seat? And I think he would have. I think that makes case in point.
Well, here's hang on just a minute. Are you talking about in his primary against Marcy Kaptur? Because I think both of them are brilliant people. Or are you talking about the fact that the gerrymandering was done by the Republicans in the first place that forced them to compete?
No, I'm not into the gerrymandering, and you're right. They're both really great people. I guess he very much has constantly touted the Constitution,
He carries a copy in his pocket at all times. I've had dinner with him, and he pulls it out. I mean, it's amazing.
Exactly.
I think
he's a great guy to ask. Because we need, and you made the point that we need people in office. I mean, I ran for U.S. Senate in Utah in 2004. I actually got 1% of the vote, oddly enough. But
it's a start.
It was a start, but I realized at that time I'd take an oath, and I could never get elected unless I had a constituency that knew the Constitution.
There you go, Joe. You're absolutely right, and we need more constitutional literacy. Thank you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
15 minutes past the hour, and President Obama is going up. He's taking on the oil barons. I have to tell you about this one, too.
But you better believe you're going to fly with me. And you could be a songbird from a new Orleans, scared of the rain, just as scared to sing. But you better believe you're going to fly with me.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 20 minutes past the hour. And Sue in the chat room, Sue Nethercutt in our chat room, tells me Thomas Rice was his name, the blackface actor, or the white actor who performed in blackface with his face, you know, painted black, in the minstrel shows in the 1830s, 1840s, 1850s, was actually his name. It was Thomas Dartmouth Daddy Rice. So, and he had, as I said, he had a character that he, in his minstrel show, by the name of Jim Crow, and thus, and it was used as a derogatory term to describe African Americans as a result of that, and that's what came out of that. The President of the United States, President Obama, has come out and said no on the oil stuff, and this I think this is very interesting. He called out Republican lapdogs who argue that drilling is going to lower our gas prices. He told a crowd in North Carolina this yesterday afternoon. He said, anyone who tells you that, and I'll fill in, you know, because it's a partial sentence. So anyone who tells you basically that drilling is going to lower gas prices, anyone who tells you that either doesn't know what they're talking about or they are not telling you the truth. Wow. The drill baby drill people are not telling you the truth. That's incredible. He's just coming right out and saying it. Meanwhile, Elizabeth Warren versus Scott Brown in Massachusetts, she's falling in the polls. Why? Because Karl Rove and the RNC have been running some real slasher ads against her. And I think that what they're doing is they're testing, they're calibrating things. They're trying to find out what works with the American electorate. They're portraying her as a screaming radical. They're trying to tie her to Occupy Wall Street, to the few people, the few troublemakers in the Occupy movement. In these ads, I mean, they actually do connect her to them. And, in fact, they quote her as saying, yes, I've thrown rocks. And, you know, she was speaking in metaphor, but that's not how they portray it. And meanwhile, Michelle Bachmann has completely jumped the shark. This is such a wild, grasping extension of weird logic. This is the kind of stuff. You know, like, you know, President Obama says, you know, it's a terrible tragedy that guy tried to kill Gabby Giffords and did kill 6 or 8 or 9 other people there down in Arizona. And immediately the right wing rumor mill starts saying, oh, President Obama doesn't like the fact that, you know, a congressman was shot at. So therefore, he must not like guns. Therefore, he wants to take away your guns. Therefore, he's going to ask you to do retinal scans and fingerprints. You know, if you're going to buy ammunition, and all the ammunition is going to have your name engraved in it. And I mean, all these weird. I've seen these emails, right? Michelle Bachmann doing the same thing with healthcare. Here it is.
Women have a lot to lose under Obamacare. What the government gives, the government can take away. It certainly isn't beyond the pale to think, in light of Kathleen Sebelius, the Health and Human Services Secretary, she said that it's important that we have contraceptives because that prevents pregnancy. and pregnancy is more expensive to the federal government. Going with that logic, according to our own Health and Human Services Secretary, it isn't far-fetched to think that the President of the United States could say, we need to save health care expenses. The federal government will only pay for one baby to be born in the hospital per family, or two babies to be born per family.
Yeah. Here's a simple question, Michelle. If the government could take that away, why couldn't United Healthcare take that away? Or Blue Cross Blue Shield? And why aren't you concerned about them? Because they're not answerable to we the people. And the government is. And by the way, you're part of the government. Albert in Friendship, Wisconsin. Hey, Albert, what's on your mind today?
Okay, I have a question about this voting ID thing.
Yeah, in your state.
Well, yeah. Well, kind of anybody that has to go through it, too.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to my brother yesterday about it. And it kind of shocked me because he had the idea that what was the big deal about this ID law. And I said, well, I said it's more than just ID. They want to, if you're poor or black or whatever, and you don't drive or something, they want to make it really difficult for those people to vote.
Yeah.
And they're mostly Democratic people who can't vote.
That's right. It's the elderly who are very concerned about the Social Security and Medicare, which are Democratic programs. The students who are very concerned about, you know, the student cost of education, and you've got Democrats, you know, I mean, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama both campaigned on giving relief to students. And, you know, they get it. The Republicans have been fighting that. And people who don't have cars, people who are too poor to own a car, or people who live in a city where you don't need a car. And those people all tend to vote Democratic. That's the Democratic constituency. So, yeah, that's what they're trying to do.
And what kind of surprised me, he didn't think about that part of that, you know, they ain't just trying to save the vote.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking maybe that you could let some people have this, you know, might have the same idea that he did.
Well, these guys are, what they're trying to do is disenfranchise voters. And in fact, we have a clip of a Reagan advisor from, you know, back in the 80s, Paul Weyrich, talking about this. You know, this is the original Republican advice. And so they have this very logical thing. Well, don't you want to know that everybody who votes is actually a legal voter? The fact of the matter is the number of people every year who illegally vote are, we have 30 seconds of the break. And how long is the clip? 20. Play the clip. Here's Paul Weyrich.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
That's it. And this was the guy who made Reagan president, Paul Weyrich, and he helped make George W. Bush president. And that's their agenda. But you're more likely to be struck by lightning. More people are struck by lightning in the United States every year than commit voter fraud. It is a non-issue. And that's the point you need to make to your friend, Albert. Thanks a lot for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Up next, your calls. And ever wake up in the middle of the night and think, wait a minute, I should be asleep? I got to tell you about something right after this in our geeky science. Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here with big news. We're moving. Starting next week, the Tom Hartman Program will be live 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's noon to 3 Pacific Time.
I'll show you just how cool scientists are. We study everything. That's why we're cool. And yes, most of us got high marks in school. And proud.
It's our Geeky Science Alert, 34 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. My opportunity to talk about one of my favorite topics, science. This was amazing. This is from the BBC News magazine last month. An amazing story. Stephanie Hegarty wrote it for the BBC World Service. She writes, "We often worry about lying awake in the middle of the night, but it could be good for you." That's the headline. She talks about work done by psychiatrist Thomas Ware, who conducted an experiment with a group of people who were plunged into darkness 14 hours every day for a month. And what happened was, by the fourth week, the subjects had settled into a very distinct sleeping pattern, all of them. They slept first for 4 hours, then woke for 1 or 2 hours before falling into a second 4-hour sleep. So then later in 2001, historian Roger Ekrich, of Virginia Tech published a seminal paper drawn from 16 years of research, revealing a wealth of historical evidence that this is how everybody sleeps. His book is called A Day's Close, Nights at Night in Times Past. He unearths more than 500 references to this segmented sleeping pattern in diaries, court records, medical books, and literature, from Homer's Odyssey to the anthropological account of modern tribes in Nigeria. And goes on to say, during this waking period in the middle of the night, people were quite active. This is Stephanie Haggerty writing for the BBC. They often got up, went to the toilet or smoked tobacco. Some even visited their neighbors. Most people stayed in bed, read, wrote, and often prayed. Countless prayer manuals from the late 15th century offered special prayers for the hours in between sleeps. People often chatted to their bedfellows or had sex. References to the first and second sleep started to disappear in the late 17th century. And by the 1920s, the idea of a first and second sleep had receded entirely from our social consciousness. Why? Because of improvements in street lighting, domestic lighting, a surge of coffee houses, which were sometimes open all night, because the street lights made it safe. Paris was the first city to light itself at night, and this was a big deal. And this is when that was in 1667, and this is when things began to change, the mid-late 17th century. But for most of evolution, so psychologist Greg Jacobs, for most of evolution, we slept a certain way. Waking up during the night is a normal part of human physiology. And the idea that we're supposed to sleep for a solid 7 or 8 hours could be damaging, he says, because when people wake up at night, they freak out. And that anxiety itself prohibits sleep and is likely to seep into your waking life as well. Russell Foster, Dr. Russell Foster, professor of circadian neuroscience at Oxford, he says, many people wake at night and panic. I tell them what they're experiencing is a throwback to the bimodal sleep pattern. And by the way, over 30% of visits to doctors are for sleeping medication or for sleeping problems that stem directly or indirectly from sleep problems. And if people simply said, you know, okay, I'm going to allocate 10 hours for sleep instead of 8, and in the middle of the night, if I wake up, I'm going to just, like, read a book for a while, everything would be copacetic. Here's another one, just a quick one. You ever heard of pink slime? Used to be illegal to put this stuff in our food. It is basically the connective tissue, what some people would refer to as gristle. The stuff that connects bones to each other and stuff, connective tissue. And it used to be just put in dog food and cat food and things. In fact, it was illegal to sell it to humans. It was not seen as fit for human consumption. It's very hard to get nutrients out of it. It also contains ammonia, which is used to kill off bacteria. Stephen Webster, writing for Raw Story, notes that by the early 90s, in the early 90s, that would have been during the George Herbert Walker Bush administration, I'm guessing, former Undersecretary of Agriculture Joanne Smith decided that this stuff was meat. Right, the meat industry refers to it as lean, finely textured beef. But what it really is pink slime. The stuff is ground so finely it's slime because there's no other way. You can't chew it, right? She decided that this was meat, and they started adding it into ground beef. And when she left her post in 1993, that would have been when Bill Clinton came into office, she immediately took a job with Beef Products, Inc. on their board of directors. Surprise, surprise! Anyhow, we're still buying and selling pink slime. Speaking of regulations, that's incredible. That's worse than incredible. So, and in fact, Nick in Cliffside Park, New Jersey, you wanted to talk about pink slime?
Yeah, let me just add a few more facts to the mix.
Okay.
In the Huffington Post, in the last day or two, they issued a story that the Department of Agriculture is planning or is engaged in selling, in purchasing rather, 7 million pounds of this garbage, pink slime, to be included in this school lunch program for our children.
Wonderful.
This, what's in there is ammonium hydroxide. The stuff is somewhat toxic. It doesn't even kill all the pathogens because even in places where the stuff is used, they still have some cases of salmonella. It's inherently a dangerous practice. It's all about making money by allowing the department, these agribusiness conglomerates, to sell what would normally be a waste product or a product that could only be sold for animal feed to be sold as human consumption so they can make more money.
Yeah, of course.
And that was selling it to our children. 70% of America's supermarkets, this was just in today's news, as you know, are currently using this as an additive in your hamburger meat. Now, I suggest that instead of just getting pissed off, that your listeners, that we do what I did, which is today I called Senator Bob Menendez, and after this call I'm going to call Senator Frank Lautenberg and my Congressman Steve Rothman, and everybody out there must today, at the end of Tom's program, listen to the program, call your senators and your congressmen and tell them you want this stuff, number one, out of the school lunch program. That's bad policy.
And number two, let's re-regulate the meat industry back the way it was before George Herbert Walker Bush's administration and before his assistant secretary of agriculture, who then went on to become a member of the board of directors of Beef Products, Inc. when she left when Clinton came into office. That we want. Yeah, regulations are good for you. They keep the pink slime out of your meat. Nick, I'm with you. And I don't mind if people call during my show, but thank you very much. Well said. And that's amazing. Larry in Williamsburg, Iowa. Hey, Larry, what's on your mind today?
Well, our Iowa legislature is supposed to be taking up a bill this week about building a nuclear plant here in Iowa somewhere. We need to get all Iowans, so we don't need a nuclear plant here.
Right.
We got a windmill plant that along Interstate 80 up along Newton, Iowa. That's the last I knew. It's doing just fine, and plus it's an awesome sight to see all those windmills out there.
Yeah, well, if you want to generate a gigawatt of electricity for the same cost as a nuclear power plant, you could buy solar panels for the rooftops of a couple hundred thousand homes, and you know those solar panels have a lifetime of 50 years at minimum, and they don't produce nuclear waste. Yeah.
Well, plus they want to also. They want to charge us for it before the plant's even built.
Of course.
That's just ridiculous.
Of course. It's like the George W. Bush Texas Rangers let's build a stadium scam. Get the money from the taxpayers and then, you know, inure the benefit of that to a private corporation. In the case that you're talking about, a nuclear power company. In the case of George W. Bush, you know, one of the owners of the Texas Rangers. You nailed it, Larry. Thank you very much for the call. Well said. Virginia in Hartford, Kentucky. Hey, Virginia, what's up?
Oh, nothing much. I've just got a.
You need to keep your TV turned down, Virginia, or it's going to distract you when you try and talk to me on the phone because there is a delay in getting the signal to the satellites and up and down and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, is it down enough now?
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay,
so what's up?
I was wondering about Walker in Michigan. What's so important with Michigan that the big wheels want to keep him in office?
Well, Walker's actually in Wisconsin, but it's close.
It's
Rick Snyder in Michigan, and he's getting money from these big right-wingers, too. There is a war going on in the United States against working people. It's really, really simple, and it is being funded in large part by a small coterie of billionaires who don't want their taxes raised, who don't want working people to have rights and powers in the United States, who don't want unions in their companies, and who do want these right-wing politicians in office because they will do their bidding. The American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, writes the legislation. They hand it off to Republican state lawmakers. They pass it. This is from the voter ID laws to deregulation laws. There's just no shortage of these things. And it's all about an agenda that will benefit the billionaires. Virginia, thank you for the call. I mean, it sounds simple. It sounds simplistic, but that's really it. I mean, that's pretty much what it was. Paul in Novi, Michigan. Hey, Paul, what's on your mind?
Yeah, how you doing, Tom? I just have two quick points to add to the pink slime debate.
Yeah.
And I think that the number one, it's not just connective tissue that's in it. It's also feces in it, which is why they have to add the ammonia to attempt to kill the E. coli that lives in that, you know.
Yikes.
And also I think that we should boycott hamburger. You know, because right now it's in 70%. This was just on ABC yesterday. It's in 70% of all hamburger.
Yeah.
And well, you know, there's no way of knowing, you know.
I can tell you it's easy to do, Paul. The last time I ate hamburger was 1967. It was like a long time ago. Most people weren't even born who were watching this show or listening to this show the last time I ate hamburger.
I cut way down on hamburger consumption when you know, Bush allowed that, you know, when they found that mad cow in our meat supply and Bush didn't do anything about it.
Yeah.
But if we just boycotted that, that'll really get a message out.
Yeah.
You know?
Vegetarians of the world unite. Paul, thanks a lot for the call. 45 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with more right after this. Did you know congressional Republicans are having some ethics problems right now? especially Daryl Issa, one of the few members of Congress to actually have a arguably criminal past, or shall we say a sketchy past, and the second richest guy in the House.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And also after the break, we're going to try to check in with Ellen Ratner, who Talk Radio News, who is in Antarctica right now. Okay, welcome back, Tom Hartman, with you, Terry. And Ellen hasn't called in from Antarctica yet, so if she is able to get through, I know her satellite phone is only intermittently working, and there's this giant solar storm that's going on right now, which may make it even more difficult for her to get through with a satellite phone. So anyhow, Terry in Shirley, New York. Hey, Terry, what's up?
Hi, I have a question about the insurance industry.
Mm-hmm.
I, myself included, and many other people I know keep getting swamped in medical bills, and it doesn't seem like that's going to get fixed because it was so unpopular after they worked on it for 2 years. I was wondering if rolling back or getting rid of, like, McCarran-Ferguson, or there are other antitrust laws that could be done away with so there could be more competition to try to get prices down, because I know the insurance industry was, like, exempt from it.
Yes. The insurance company does have an exemption from the antitrust laws, so they can collude with each other to fix prices.
Which is exactly what they do.
Right. Exactly. And that exemption from the antitrust laws is something, I agree with you, that should be taken away from them. And if it was, you might see genuine competition in the marketplace. Frankly,
Republicans are always saying they're so for the free market and competition and things like that.
They're not. They're for the plutocrats and the billionaires. Yeah, of course.
When they were fixing health care, they could have taken care of that then and rolled that back.
Yeah.
And I think everybody's prices at that point would be starting to come down.
Yep. Yep, I'm with you, Terry. And you put your finger on it. And not only do we need to do away with their antitrust exemption, but we also need to start enforcing the Sherman antitrust law.
And it's
children
enforced
over the years. So yeah, Reagan stopped enforcing that in '82, and we need to put it back into place. So Terry, thank you very much for the call and for your thoughtful and insightful note. Robert in Wildona, California. Hey, Robert, what's up? Oop, I'm sorry. I need to click the button here in the right place. Robert, you're on the air.
Well, do you eat donuts?
Here you go. I need stronger glasses. What's up, Robert?
Question, Tom. I've talked to you before. I think you're slipping a little bit. Fox, your Fox guys yesterday are a little bit ahead of you. And not only that, but I've been hearing stories that they're paying the farmers off shutting the windmills down. They don't want to buy the energy.
And who is they who doesn't want to buy the energy?
The oil companies. They've done this before with these big dump sites that push off methane, and they put pipes in the ground. And I've been there. I've worked in there, and they go. And I've had inspectors tell me, "Yeah, well, you ought to tell them they only use it in an emergency, and then they only buy maybe 1/3." Same way. I've heard stories about nuclear power plants. They only use 1/3 of the power. So why do they build them?
Yeah.
And then I've been hearing, I heard yesterday on Fox News, and I've been hearing this, I heard the story before it even came out, that the big farmers, they're paying them off to shut some of the windmill off because they've got too much energy.
Yeah.
They don't.
Robert, it entirely may be. There may be some parts of the country where we are generating, and thanks for the call, where we are generating too much electricity with wind power, and that's why we need smart grids. A smart grid is a grid that balances power and allows for local generation of power and allows power to go in, and it allows us to create a system where people can put on the roofs of their houses systems, or in their backyards or whatever, systems that may produce more electricity than they use, so they can feed power back into the grid. And that's a 21st century system, and that's something that the Republicans want to have absolutely nothing to do with. They're totally wedded to 19th century energy systems. Jeff in Moorhaven, Florida. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
How are you? A couple of things. No one's ever talking about what the cost of the fracking is going to cost per gallon of fuel. I've never heard that
that number, what's going to cost?
Well, one of the reasons you don't have that information is because the externalities associated with fracking, the costs to society as a whole, the cost of polluted water, the cost of contaminated land, those costs have never been quantified. Nobody has ever done the math on those.
And the other thing I want to bring out is I've never heard anyone say, from whom are we borrowing all this money? In other words, it's not money. Money is nothing more than a currency where what money buys.
You're talking about the national debt? How do we borrow money with the national? How does the national debt represent borrowed money?
It's not real money there. So
well, actually,
why don't we face up to that?
It is. We sell treasury bills, and which are IOUs against the government. So, you know, you can buy one. And in fact, I have one. I mean, you can buy a treasury bill. You can buy them in $1,000 denominations, $5,000, $10,000, maybe larger than that. I don't know. That's how we do it.
Phil, I'm asking you, where is this big pot of money or bills? Where is this labor and goods and services stored? I thought we owe most of the money to the World Bank and the IMF. That's
no, we don't. No, the World Bank and the IMF. In fact, Brazil has, I was reading this morning in the Financial Times, the Brazil Central Bank has a pile of money that they're sitting on that's four times larger than what the World Bank has for their entire funding program for other countries. The fact of the matter is that we owe the money to anybody who buys treasuries. There's a little less than $2 trillion of that, I believe, that is owned by individual nations. China, Saudi Arabia are big investors in the United States. Most of it, about $3 billion of it, or $2.5 trillion, excuse me, and that would have been trillions, $2 trillion. $2.5 trillion of it is owned by the Social Security Administration, and when they redeem that, the Treasury will have to pay them back. They've loaned that money to us.
I understand that, Tom, but I'm just trying to understand where money is nothing, the dollar value.
Right.
The
money represents goods or services, in other words, is what you're saying.
And so where is this huge pot of goods and services? And then I want to ask you one more question. How much is the dollar worth?
Right.
The dollar is worth
whatever we all agree it's worth because it's a fiat currency. It's a currency that is not anchored in any particular thing like gold or silver or something like that.
It is
somewhat subjective. It's the dollar is worth what people are willing to pay for it. And what we've seen over the last couple of years, the last decade or so, actually what we've seen since the late 19th century, is that the dollar has become progressively worth less and less and less. And that's because of our fractional banking system, which is a whole nother rant.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. One of the really interesting subjects that is coming up as a consequence of Mitt Romney running for, and John Huntsman as well, running for the Republican nomination for President of the United States is Mormonism, the whole issue of Mormonism. And this rebirth is perhaps the wrong word, but there actually is a theory that this continent, that Europeans living on this continent are now going through the fourth great awakening or reformation, that there was one in the late 1600s, that there was another one in the late 1700s, there was another one in the mid to late 1800s, and that this is the fourth one. And that's a whole other theory that we'll get into sometime. But they're driven by basically fundamentalist Christianity. But the Great Awakening of the late 19th century included things like the creation of the Seventh-day Adventist Church by Ellen White and the creation of the Mormon religion by Joseph Smith and then Brigham Young, his buddy or disciple or whatever he was. I do not represent myself at all as an authority on Mormonism. But it seems to be playing a significant role in the Republican primary, because in states like Idaho, where there are a lot of Mormons, Mitt Romney wins easily, or Arizona, where there's a lot of Mormons. In states where there are very few Mormons, Mitt Romney has a serious problem. Alex McFarland is on the line with us. He is a Christian speaker, author of the book 10 answers for skeptics, alexmcfarland.com, the website. Dr. Alex McFarland, welcome to the program.
Tom, it's great to be back on. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. In fact, this piece that Brian Tashman wrote, which I think you're connected with, the conspicuous absence of the two Mormon presidential candidates, Mitt Romney and John Huntsman, from Saturday's Thanksgiving family forum was not lost on the religious right. Now, this goes back to November, but why were they not there? Were they not invited? Do they not consider themselves, you know, what's going on?
Well, I think what's going on is that just as, you know, 9/11 brought Islam to the front page for a lot of people, and for the first time, a lot of Americans began to become familiar with that worldview. I think now a lot of Americans are becoming familiar with Mormonism. And, you know, in a way, I mean, while Mormons in many ways are exemplary citizens and, you know, ethics and morality and family are very strong, a lot of things related not only to Christian life and practice, but to American life and American history in general are kind of, taboo for some Mormons. And I think while...
For example?
Participating in things that like Christmas and Easter and celebrating what classical orthodoxy has believed, that Jesus Christ is deity, the Son of God.
And Mormons don't practice Christmas and Easter?
Well, not the same way that classical, you know, orthodoxy would, that Christian orthodoxy would, because Christianity believes that Jesus Christ really is God incarnate.
But these were, you know, most of Americans who call themselves Christians and or who call themselves secular, and even some people of other religions, celebrate Christmas and Easter in the kind of secular way that harken back to their original pagan roots, which was, you know, Easter was a fertility rite. They would take the blood of rabbits and eggs, and they would eat eggs, and they take the blood of rabbits and sprinkle them on the fields in the spring so that the crops would grow well. You know, let's all go for fertility here. And you know, Christmas was the winter solstice. It was the shortest day of the year, and so for thousands of years, the head, you know, guy would climb up on the top of the biggest mountain and find the biggest tree and set that thing on fire on the night of the shortest day of the year and say, I'm going to bring the sun back. And then as the days got longer and longer after that, everybody would say, he did it again, and he'd be the head guy for another year. And, I mean, yeah, so people,
well, you know,
are you saying Mormons don't have Christmas trees and don't do Easter bunnies?
Many of them do not. I know when I lived in Colorado 3 years, and we dialogued with many, many Mormons that would come to our front door often. And let me point out this. There are theological characteristics that need to be understood, and there are social characteristics. And while they might observe the same, you know, holidays and days off work, theologically, Mormonism and Christianity are definitely polar opposites. And
yet, so, Mormonism claims to be Christianity, and the there are progressive Christian churches that claim to be Christian that Jerry Falwell would have eschewed. You may. There are fundamentalist churches that claim to be Christian that I think some people kind of in the middle would say, no, that's not me. You know, I'm not about slaying people in the spirit or whatever it may be. You know, the Anabaptists, you know, I'm not about not dancing.
Right.
There's this whole huge spectrum of Christianity. What makes you or anybody else the anointed one to say these other people aren't Christians?
Well, I wrote one book called Stand, Core Truths You Must Know for an Unshakable Faith, and I talk about the six most basic Christian beliefs that for 2,000 years all of Christendom have held. Slice the pie of Christianity in three slices: Catholicism, Eastern Orthodox, Protestantism. All have affirmed the inspiration of Scripture, the virgin birth of Christ, the deity of Christ, his atonement on the cross. He paid for our sins. He rose. He's going to return. So inspiration, virgin birth, deity, atonement, resurrection,
return. Yeah, it's a familiar litany, or I guess litany is the wrong word. It sounds pejorative.
Exactly.
But I think everybody's familiar with that. So how do Mormons deviate from that?
When Joseph Smith came along in the 1800s, and I'm glad you mentioned the Second Great Awakening, because that was very emotive and less cognitive. It was very much experiential and not so much biblical. And out of the aftermath of the Second Great Awakening, we did get a lot of the religious groups. I'm not going to say that they're all cults, but you've got the Jehovah's Witnesses, the Latter-day Saints, the Seventh-day Adventists. You've got a lot of the groups that use Christian terminology, but with different definitions.
Well, there was widespread hysteria in the 1870s and 1880s in the United States that the world was going to end. Ellen White led her merry band up the top of a mountain and waited for the world to end. And when it didn't end, you know, she reinvented and what became the Seventh-day Adventist religion. I'm sure I'm mangling their history, but
it's true. And you know, there were in fact, there's a very famous political cartoon of the Mormons going westward, and there's like a big skull, and over the fort of the skull is the word Utah, and there are just throngs marching into it.
Yeah.
And the Mormon history, the Millerites, so many of those other doomsday groups out of the late 1800s.
Yeah. But I haven't spent much. I don't know any Mormons, frankly. I can't profess to have done any research or ever had this serious kind of conversation with a Mormon. But having been a vegetarian for a lot of years and having run a program for abused kids in New Hampshire back
God
in the day that was vegetarian, the Seventh-day Adventist showed up, and because they're vegetarian.
Yeah.
And I got to know them pretty well because, you know, they supported our program and they brought us food. And of course, they wanted to evangelize, which we did not allow.
Yeah.
And because we were not an evangelical program and we certainly weren't a Seventh-day Adventist program. But I found them to be wonderful people. And that, you know, in terms of Christian standards of behavior and common decency. And I see you've got your six things for Christianity. My thing for Christianity is Matthew 25. I think that's the essence of Christianity. I mean, that was the only place in the entire Bible where anybody came to Jesus and said, how do I get into heaven? And he said, you know, feed the hungry, heal the sick, give water to the thirsty, visit those in prison unjustly. And then the disciples freaked out because they'd never seen him hungry. Mm-hmm. And he said, as you do to the least among these, your brethren, you've done unto me. I mean, that in my mind is, and Mormons practice that, don't they?
Well, they do. They do. And let me say, as far as being, you know, benevolent agents in the culture and socially, I mean, there's so much common ground. And I think on this common ground, we all need to rally and pull together. I just think it needs to be pointed out that theologically there are differences.
Yeah.
But
well, you know, I get that. And we're out of time. But good shot. AlexMcFarland.com. People can read more about it. Alex, thanks for being with us.
Hey, Tom, I appreciate you very much.
Yeah. Good talking with you. This is a conversation that is only beginning if Mitt Romney is the presidential nominee. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
What do you know about Mormons? And Elizabeth Warren being trashed by the RNC. I got to tell you about this. Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here with big news. We're moving. Starting next week, the Tom Hartman Program will be live 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's noon to 3 Pacific Time.
If my mama's got a judge on Sunday, will you go with me on Friday night? If you live with me on that bar, you haven't gone for mine.
20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you in the place where smart people get their news. Wendy in Orange City, California, listening on K-Talk. Hey, Wendy, what's up?
Hey, I'm a former Mormon from Salt Lake City myself, and I was just listening to your last guest. He had a few things wrong.
Okay.
Mormons do celebrate Christmas and Easter, but they do have very, very different idea of Christianity than the rest of the Christian world.
Okay. The celebration is similar in terms of, hey, we've got a Christmas tree, and the Easter Bunny's going to leave some eggs under the couch kind of thing?
Absolutely. That's all the same.
Yeah, I mean, that's our culture. That's not our religion, frankly, I think. You know, I know people who are atheists who celebrate these holidays.
Exactly.
Because their kids expect it. You know, this is our culture. And as I said, these are ancient, you know, holidays, celebrations. So,
but there are a lot of things in Mormon beliefs that are very foreign to I'm a mainstream Christian now. So, if the Mormon Church doesn't talk a lot about their things about, you know, eternal progression and how they believe that they can become gods if we're good enough and things like that. So,
eternal progression.
So that's the whole basis of the Mormon religion.
So, if you work your way up enough in the Mormon Church and you're a virtuous enough person that when you die, you can become a god?
That's correct.
A co-creator?
And they believe that Jesus Christ is separate from God the Father and that he had to earn his way. And so they have a lot of really unique beliefs that Joseph Smith kind of made up. So,
yeah.
And they don't talk about them a lot because they're so different from mainstream Christianity.
Well, and he borrowed a lot from the Masons as well. And although it's interesting that
Smith was a Mason.
Yeah, and George Washington's first inauguration was a Mason Masonic parade. I mean, there's woodcuts of that. And all the various Mason groups showed up, and the Masons is where the secret underwear started out, and the temple ritual started out, and all these things that are replicated in Mormonism were actually just borrowed apparently were borrowed from the Masonic rituals by Joseph Smith. Thank you, Wendy, for the call.
Yeah,
thanks.
A lot of Mormons don't know that today.
Yeah, they don't. Really?
A lot of that is just that they're told that that's not true. They have nothing to do with Masons, and they just believe it. But if Mitt Romney is the Republican nominee, all of this stuff is going to come out, and I think it's going to be a lot of embarrassing things for the Mormon Church.
Well, either it's one of two things is going to happen. Either it's going to be embarrassing, or it's going to go mainstream. It's going to actually help the Mormon Church, and a lot of people are going to say, okay, so what's the big deal? I mean, there are people who go to church on Sundays and they drink wine and they think that it's blood. And, that seems kind of odd to some people. And so how is wearing magic underwear any different? You know, so it may be that you'll see Mormonism, it'll be cut some slack. I honestly don't know how it's going to shake out, Wendy, but we'll see. Thank you for the call. Paul in Irvine, California, listening to KTLA. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Hey, Tom, I encourage you and your audience to watch a PBS documentary. It's available for free online.
Mm-hmm.
Called The Mormons.
Okay.
I learned a lot about it. I mean, it's not just a conspiracy. Mormons look like decent, good people, right? Until you start asking questions about their history and how they treat women and minorities and things like that.
Well, you could say the same thing about Christianity and Judaism and Islam. I mean, you want to go back 1,000 years or 2,000 years. I mean, you go back to the Crusades in the 1130s, I think it was. And,
no, absolutely. But they're
Pope Pius saying, kill everyone. You know, the blood was up to the shoulders of the horses in Jerusalem.
I suppose one of the differences is that this is in the 20th century that some of these things happen. They didn't allow Mormons wanted to ask the Mormon Church to send missionaries over so they can be baptized. They didn't agree until the president also serves as the prophet of the Mormon Church. Now Mitt Romney is going to have to say if he becomes a nominee that the president of the Mormon Church also serves as their prophet, and he won't allow gay people to get married until that prophet God tells that prophet that it's okay.
Right.
And they're just all kinds of
The Mormon Church, much like mainstream Christianity, has a long and every religion, frankly, has a long history of waking up and getting with the program when times change. I mean, the Mormon Church up until 1978, said that the mark of Cain, Cain killed Abel, and there was a mark on his forehead so that everybody would recognize him and treat him badly. And this is, right out of Genesis. And the Mormons, right up until the 70s, I believe, I could be wrong on the year, but it's in that neighborhood, said that mark of Cain was being black, and therefore they didn't allow African Americans to become full members of the church up until the mid or late 70s when they were forced to. But they're there now. So, like they're getting with the program.
Yeah, but just one other thing, just one last thing. Bear in mind that one of the last primaries is going to be in Utah. And if you watch that documentary, it's like I said, it's free on PBS, Frontline, online, called The Mormons.
Right.
They're very, very organized. I mean, very organized.
Oh yeah.
They teach their missionaries to be bilingual. They have a mountain vault right out of X-Files with all the names of the dead people they baptized. I mean, they are organized like nobody's business. So
let's not
underestimate the election.
That's how they took down gay marriage in California. I mean,
It's a great movie too. Proposition H California. Yeah, Prop 8.
There's a movie about that.
It's a documentary. I'm sorry. It's online. Just look up Proposition 8 and the Mormon proposition.
Mm.
I saw that it was a great documentary. It explained how they spend millions of dollars very clandestinely, by the way, to get, they started out in Hawaii and then they came to California and put all their money, basically, they just threw a lot of money.
Well, it wasn't just money. They threw a lot of volunteers. I mean, they were running phone banks. They had people calling from their homes. They calling voters. It was a very, very comprehensive, very concerted effort to roll back gay marriage. that
right.
that they as a religion objected to. And my prediction is that 15 or 20 years from now, Mormonism is going to accept gay marriage, you know, just like they accepted what they used to call misogyny. And
well,
you know, well, yeah, we'll see. We'll see. But I think that, you know, as time goes by, religions either adapt or die. And, you know, the times, they are changing. Paul, thanks a lot for the call. Appreciate it. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Up next, your calls and thoughts and mine and the good, the bad, and the new vocabulary word, ugly. Yep, that would be the good, the bad, and the very, very molendinaciously ugly. Brought to you by EdisonFactor.com, food for your brain. The good, Black Hills Sioux and Ogallala Sioux tribes. Members of the two Native American tribes set up a roadblock in South Dakota on Monday to prevent trucks from shipping tar sands equipment to Canada as part of the Keystone XL project. The tribes, like most Americans, are opposed to the construction of the pipeline. They argue that it would cross through their land illegally and that it would greatly harm the rural area, the water supply for the area. The pipeline would likely endanger members of the tribe who use that water for daily activities. Remember, the Sioux tribe stood up to Keystone and corporate power, and it's time for the rest of us to do the same thing and stop this Keystone project for good. The bad. American Petroleum Institute President Jack Girard. Testifying before a House subcommittee yesterday, Girard told legislators that, quote, "We get no subsidies in the oil and gas business," end quote, referring to the oil industry. Even more shockingly, Girard went on to claim that gas prices in America would increase if Congress stopped handing out tax breaks to big oil. Let's fact check Mr. Girard for a second. Big oil receives $40 billion in tax breaks over the last 10 years, making it one of the most heavily subsidized industries in America. In a speech filled with misinformation, it's clear Mr. Girard was just lobbying for big oil to continue raking in the money. And the very, very ugly Wisconsin Republican lawmakers. Republican lawmakers voted Tuesday to amend the state constitution to make it harder to remove an elected official from office. The sponsor of the amendment, Representative Robin Bose, argued that changes are needed to limit recalls given the flurry of such efforts in the past year. The measure would allow recalls only if lawmakers were charged with serious crimes or violated ethical codes. I'd say running the Wisconsin economy into the ground and trying to abolish workers' rights are serious crimes. Rather than accept the fact that voters in Wisconsin want a new government, Republican lawmakers are trying to circumvent the law and barricade themselves in the state capitol, and that is very, very ugly. Very, very ugly. Okay, Edward in Portland, Oregon, listening on KPOJ. You want to correct the record about Mormons?
Yes, actually, I am a Mormon, an active Mormon, and I listen to Tom Hartman, so I'm mm-hmm. probably one of the only ones.
But, well, I'm not about yeah. bashing Mormons. I think you've no. heard me say that. You know, it seems to me like, you know, every religion has its idiosyncrasies. That when other religions look at it, they think, "Oh, that's weird," and
yeah.
you know, that's
yeah. yeah, yeah. No, actually, that's something that I've always appreciated about listening to you. You're very respectful to everyone, and that means a lot to me. But
thank you.
Regarding your guest, basically. What he said about, I think another one of your callers stated about Christmas and Easter, it's celebrated just the same. I mean, it's a cultural thing. Like
yeah, that's what I figured. And I think the most important question that I asked him that he never answered was, who appointed him to be the arbiter of what is and isn't Christianity? Who appoints anybody?
Right.
I mean, there's, to the best of my knowledge, and maybe the head of the Mormon Church claims this right, but to the best of my knowledge, the only person who claims that his religion or whose religion claims that he has the right and the power to define what are the parameters, what do you have to do to be that, is the Pope. As far as I know, that's it.
Yeah.
You know, there's not a Protestant Pope. There is a Catholic Pope. And so the Catholic Church, you've got one guy who can make the decision. All these other cults and sects and religions and maybe I shouldn't use the word cult, but, you know, variations and varieties. To the best of my knowledge, you know, they have their doctrine and they say, okay, here's the 7-point checklist if you want to be one of us. But, you know, they don't have one person who says, okay, it's going to time to change the checklist. Maybe the head of, does the president of the Mormon Church have that role? Does he, Does he speak ex, what is it, ex cathedras is the word, the Latin word for speaking from the in the voice of God, like the Pope does?
It's similar. The Mormon theology says that we're the true church on the earth today.
Yeah, but they all
and
say
that's
that.
One of those idiosyncrasies, and that's one of those idiosyncrasies that, you know, they're all different.
Yeah.
You know, the big thing is the Trinity doesn't mm-hmm. exist in Mormon theology. We believe that Jesus Christ was actually the Son, you know, the Son of God. He's not actually God. And then regarding eternal progression, just one quick thing I wanted to correct from what you said.
Sure.
Is not that as you move up in the Mormon church, it's that this life is just one step in our eternal progression.
Uh-huh.
That's what that means. This life is just one step. So any of us,
right.
whether it be somebody who was born into the church and raised in the church and becomes president of the church or whatever, to somebody who's never even heard the gospel, has the same chance of becoming exalted.
Yeah, that's not that's
at the end of our existence.
Depending on the definition of exalted, that's not that different than some of the things that Edgar Cayce was saying back in the early 20th century. You know,
yeah, and by exalted, it is that we will become gods and goddesses ourselves.
Sure. Okay. Well, I'm not sure that Cayce was saying that, and Cayce was talking about reincarnation, which I'm sure Mormonism doesn't embrace. But interesting point. Interesting point. Thank you very much. Thank you, Edward, for the call. Appreciate it. Andrea in Salt Lake City, Utah. Speaking of Mormons. Hey, Andrea.
Hi. How are you doing, Tom?
Just great.
Good to talk to you.
Thank you for calling.
Hi. I'm just calling. My family, I'm raised with a fully Mormon family,
mm-hmm.
and they do, as others have pointed out, they do celebrate Christmas and Easter the same as others.
Sure.
And in fact, if you didn't celebrate, you'd probably be in trouble.
Uh-huh. Okay. So, go ahead.
Oh, no. You.
Oh, that was the point that you wanted to make?
Well, that one, and also just about... My number one point was probably about having a president who would be Mormon might be maybe a volatile situation since, in my family, what I've gone through from having a Mormon family is I've pretty much been put in exile about not believing exactly what they believe in and
right.
conforming to what
they believe. So you're a renegade Mormon or a not quite Mormon.
Well, I'm not Mormon. My family, my whole family is. I haven't been taken off the books because it's hard to be.
Right.
And for social reasons, don't right. want to put myself in the position to do that.
Right. It's interesting. There are a lot of people who call themselves, you know, apparently in Mormonism, there's like secular Mormons, what you're describing as yourself. There are a lot of people who call themselves secular Jews. There's not so many people who call themselves secular Christians that use that phrase, but frankly, I think that probably the majority of people who would identify or who would self-identify as Christians are actually secular Christians. They don't practice, you know, their religion with any great intensity, but they identify as Christians. And
I'm not at all. I don't like religion personally.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've gone through with my family being all religious Mormons, I've realized that it's something that you either have to kind of go along with or you are pushed out.
Yeah, well, that's true with all of the really intense religions, you know, the mm-hmm. fundamentalist Baptists, right across the board, it's pretty much. Andrea, thank you very much for the call and for your thoughtful comments. Ken in Aurora, Illinois. Hey, Ken, what's up?
Oh, yes, I got something interesting in the mail yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
It was a letter from Governor Scott Walker.
Oh, really? In Illinois?
Right. It's from the Friends of Scott Walker,
uh-huh.
paid for by the Friends of Scott Walker.
Right.
It says, "Dear fellow conservatives are under attack in Wisconsin. That means there's big trouble ahead where you live. If powerful labor unions get their way in my state, don't get their way in yours. Our crisis today is your crisis tomorrow."
So send me some money.
Well, yeah, after a little while it goes into that. It
yeah.
goes on with a move on and... George Soros and Hollywood, you know.
The Hollywood liberals, they're coming to get us.
Yep.
Oh, man.
Really,
that's incredible. Ken, so so Scott Walker's using direct mail. That's fascinating. Thank you very much for the call.
Yeah.
I appreciate the information. Margo in Tucson, Arizona. Hey, Margo, what's on your mind today?
Hello, Tom.
Thank you for taking my call. Sure. You were asking about what do you know about the Mormon Church? Well, mm-hmm. I'm a religious writer, and what I did actually was study the Book of Mormon. Hmm. And everybody knows that the Mormon Church teaches that Jesus Christ visited North America. And, you know, the Book of Mormon is divided into books and chapters like the Bible. And if you go to the book, which is called the Third Book of Nephi, that tells the story of Jesus Christ's visit to North America, the Third Book of Nephi starts, I believe, in chapter 9, that the first thing that Jesus did when he got like midair over North America was he killed everybody.
Hmm.
And they're stuck with that story until they deal with the fact that, you know, it says this and they're going to have to take a position, and maybe like what I would advise them to do is just kind of retire the Book of Mormon.
Yeah.
But, they're stuck with that.
Yeah, I've read pieces of the Book of Mormon over the years. I've stayed in a lot of Marriott hotels, and you know, it's a Mormon owned company, and although I own one share of stock in it, and they used to, I'm assuming they still do have the Book of Mormon, you know, in the nightstand next to your bed, and on many occasions I've picked it up and just read a couple of pages here and there, not any kind of scholarship or whatever, but question: if Jesus killed everybody in the North American continent, where did the Native Americans come from? The people that
Those were the people he killed.
But they're still here.
Those are the people. That's rationalized. I mean, you know, Joseph Smith made that up. But the thing is, they're stuck with it. Now, Mormon missionaries come by my house. I'm in Arizona. And I have friends who are Mormons. And I have never yet met a Mormon who was actually aware of that. And a lot of times when I mention it to them, they say, oh, it doesn't say that, or they say that's not true.
Uh-huh.
But if you look it up,
Third Book of Nephi, Chapter 9. I'm making a note. Thank you very much.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
3 Nephi 9. Welcome back. Pennsylvania is going to become the next Republican-run state to do pass voter ID laws.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens.
I find this just absolutely fascinating, all these different perspectives on Mormonism. Rita in Salt Lake City, Utah, you suggest that the person who called before the break saying that we should all read 3 Nephi 9, or whatever it is, was out to lunch, or was wrong.
Yeah, she basically, first of all, Tom, I just want to let you know that I'm a huge, huge fan of yours. So I'm the first-time caller, but a long-time listener.
Thank you.
And she was definitely false. For her to come on and say that she studies the Book of Mormon, if she truly did study the Book of Mormon, she would know that what she was saying was false, because Jesus, when he ascended to heaven, he didn't kill everybody. In fact, he came, according to the Book of Mormon, it says that he visited the Americas, you know, gathered the little children, blessed them, taught them, and then ascended into heaven and basically said, you know, that he was going to come back again. So
what would cause her to think that? Is there some language in there that could be misconstrued?
Nephi. Well, there was, I mean, when he did descend onto the earth, you know, there was a, you know, prior to his descending, he, you know, there was like earthquakes and, you know, all kinds of natural disasters. And so when he came, peace followed him into, and so he was able to,
So there's kind of a shockwave that preceded him.
Yeah, exactly.
And that might have killed everybody? Except that there were people here if he was blessing little children.
Yes, I don't think it killed everybody. It didn't kill everybody, according to the book. It didn't kill everyone. So.
It's fascinating to parse religions, isn't it?
Yes.
I just find it fascinating.
And then the term that you used, because you were like, oh, so you're kind of Mormon, the term would be Jack Mormon for somebody who's a non-practicing member of the
Jack Mormon. Church, that would be like what I'm calling a secular Mormon or a secular Jew or a secular Christian or Catholic.
Exactly.
Okay. People who want to have the culture, but they don't want to practice the religion itself.
Not even that. A lot of people who are Jack Mormon their records are part of the church, and they're known to be part of the church, but they don't practice any of the principles.
Right. Okay. Rita, thank you very much. Thank you very much. We're hearing a lot of voices here today. I find it fascinating. John in Orange County, California, listening on KTalk. Hey, John, what's up?
Yeah, Tom, thanks for taking my call. I was raised in the Mormon Church for many years, was a missionary, and I've studied Mormonism as well as Orthodox Christianity, and I find that the similarities are far more in all the different Christian religions. They're similar in so many ways, yet they nitpick on something like the incarnation, which nobody can really describe what the heck it is.
Sure.
Or the resurrection, nobody can really describe what it is, yet they're fighting each other over it.
Isn't that the nature of religions that split off from each other, that they have to figure out a way to differentiate themselves and say, this is our group, and that's their group, and they're different from us, and here's how? I mean,
the Protestants had to use the Bible as their standard because they really didn't have anything else to land on. But there's nothing in Christianity or anything that says, "Oh, you got to use the Bible as your standard."
Well, actually, my recollection is that there is toward the end of Revelation. There's some. In fact, I think it's the very last verse of Revelation is something like, if you mess with this book, you're in big trouble.
I don't mean to cut you off. The same scriptures found in Deuteronomy, and the books weren't even put together as a Bible at the time they were written. These were scattered books that are all around.
Oh, of course.
And so that could be interpreted to nothing should be added to the book of Revelation,
right?
Or was it to the whole Bible?
Right.
It's fun. I totally enjoy the study, but the idea is like exactly what you said when Jesus and the other apostles outlined that it's being good to one another, feed the hungry. Clothe the naked, visit the prisoners, and, if you've done it on the least of these, you've done it unto me. And that's what really Jesus was trying to say. Judge not that you be not judged. And
not just Jesus. I mean, those are core principles of Judaism. Those are core principles of Islam, of course, which, followed. But they're not just Abrahamic principles. Those are the principles. Those are core principles of Hinduism. They're the core principles of Jainism. They're core principles of Confucianism. They're core principles of
Buddhism.
These are, I would submit to you, core principles of probably every indigenous group in the world, every little tribe that never heard of anybody else, other than the tribes around them for 5 or 10,000 years has come up with. These are the core principles of human morality. And I personally don't believe that we need enlightened religions or divinely inspired religions to tell us what morality is. I think that, what was the phrase?
Totally
we looked
agree.
At our hearts and found it carved there in our hearts. I mean, this was Thomas Jefferson writing to James Madison. He said we didn't need to dig up dusty books to determine. I'm mangling the quote now. I don't remember it word for word, but we didn't need to dig up dusty books and to determine how to live morally. We looked in our hearts and found it carved there. And
something makes bees and ants operate like they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
And it must be something that makes them feel good, just like eating and reproducing make us feel good.
Yeah.
And so just the basic cores is in all of us. Religion should be looked at as rituals to help us to follow those basic cores, not as a basis to go attack each other or pick apart words that nobody even knows how to understand.
Well, we need to try to elevate them rather than use them as weapons. John, I got to move along. I just have a minute left here
in the show,
and thank you. I want to get Lisa in Albuquerque, New Mexico in because she looked up 3 Nephi 9, and what'd you find?
Actually, I found that there was no, at least in my copy of the Book of Mormon, there is no third chapter of Nephi. It ends with the second chapter.
Well, I'm here, and Sue has posted this in the chat room, and I'm not sure the reference of this. Oh, it's lds.org/scriptures. This is from the Church of the Latter-day Saints. Chapter 9, In the Darkness, the voice of Christ proclaims the destruction of many people and cities for their wickedness. He also proclaims his divinity, announces that the law of Moses is fulfilled, and invites men to come unto him and be saved. So that's not all the people. That's just many of the people. Make sense?
I don't know. They took it out of the one that I have.
Okay. It's over at lds.org/scriptures/BOFM/3-NE/9? LA. Oh, language equals English. You can look it up at the Latter-day Saints website. And it'll be in our daily stack. If you subscribe to our newsletter, you'll have links to all of the things that we talk about every day and every topic. Coming up tomorrow, Brunch with Bernie. Senator Bernie Sanders will be here for our national town hall meeting. And don't forget, democracy begins with you. Get out there, get active, tag. You're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.